4 for the Eagles here. Murphy in shotgun. Here's the snap. He rolls left. He throws.
Welcome to the WZBC Sports Podcast, episode 4 of season 2. My name is Steve Mackley, joined by my trusty co-host on our AM radio show and friend, Matt Seely. We were both two of the broadcasters on the Central Michigan game this past weekend, so we're going to talk a little bit of analysis on that. But Matt, first, how was the first play-by-play for football experience?
It was really cool. You know, I was telling a few people afterward, I was a little afraid, I suppose, going into play-by-play, and there was a lot of preparation that I needed going into it. But once I got into a rhythm, play-by-play can be easier than color. You don't really have to think. You kind of just describe what's going on the field and, let your mouth go from there.
I would agree, yeah. I am not a hockey expert, but I find that once you know the names for hockey, it's pretty much easier actually just to call out the names as fast-paced as it is than try to deliver analysis on it. As I've seen people who know the program here know that we also cover hockey, basketball, and baseball. So I can understand. In some ways, play-by-play is easier. It's all about that comfort level kind of thing. But in any case, the Eagles get the win 28-8 over Central Michigan. And there's not, like, this isn't the kind of game that you necessarily would talk about too much anyway, because they should have beat Central Michigan, and they did. They were clearly the more physically dominant team, clearly the more athletic team, so they took care of business. And although there are many criticisms out there of Steve Adazio as a head coach, I've always said he never takes any opponent lightly. Like I don't feel that BC is going to be the team that would take an opponent lightly and then possibly drop a game to them. I mean, this past weekend, you might have saw LSU lost to Troy at LSU. I guess Troy's FBS. I haven't looked into it. But the point being that they probably overlooked Troy a little bit. And if you're Louisiana State University, you probably should not be losing to anyone that's outside of the SEC, but that's a whole different conversation. We are not in the SEC. So, Matt, based on kind of your observations, obviously it was, you know, an up-and-down game at times. I mean, at one point, Central Michigan was winning with the safety, 2-0, and luckily the score did not stay at that. That would have been not a fun, BC lost Central Michigan 2-0.
No, I think you had said during the broadcast, man, this would be worse than that 3-0 loss to Wake Forest if we lost by a safety.
It would be, yeah. Oh, gosh. Let's not go back there.
No, not at all. That's actually one of the questions that I wanted to ask. Do you think that that is something that we should be concerned about, the fact that we let up safety? That you know, obviously, it happens. It's rare. But do you think that that's something that could have been prevented? You know, is there blame to be cast as a result of that? Your thoughts?
Yeah, I do think it could have been prevented. Now, that question was posed to Steve Adazio, and he said that at that moment in the game, it was early in the game, and the line has a lot of injuries in general, but there were guys that were injured this past week that didn't practice a lot, and he's like, they weren't really in their set yet. And they got bulleted on that one play, and you know, he minimized it to just, hey guys, it was one play. And I don't think you can look at it like that. I mean, when you're backed up on your own goal line, you need to be very careful, but no matter what you do. You know, the typical BC first down play is around up the middle, and that's not facetious at all. I mean, that is the truth. And I think if you're Central Michigan, like, you may as well just sell out on that. I mean, they're looking at, like, this is a chance to get some points early. We are really, really most teams in that situation would run the ball, you know, into the line anyway, because it's risky to drop back for a pass. And if somebody's get open, If you throw intentional grounding in the end zone, that's also a safety. So, like, you're just trying to get out of there as soon as possible and probably even take the punt, which this team does a lot. They take a lot of punts. So I don't think you can minimize it was just one play. Overall, the line got better after that, and I think they played pretty well. And I think for the most part, when you look at all the injuries that they have this year, the offensive line has played pretty decent, but that was a frustrating play. I mean, I think if you're BC, you should be able to kind of counteract that and think, like, you know, an off-tackle run is risky because, again, that's more time where the edge rush can get in there and you know, tackle the running back in the end zone. And BC, I don't think, has any, like, quick running backs. They were more of a bruising team. Even A.J. Dillon, I would say, is more of a bruiser. Certainly Hilleman is. So I think that was frustrating. I mean, the bottom line is BC's offensive line, despite the injury, should be able to push enough to keep out of the end zone, and they got pushed back. And I give Central Michigan credit for jumping on that and saying, we'll take the risk if they try to do something out of the ordinary because we are so confident this is what they're going to do that let's try to get the safety. And they did it. And I think it speaks to the larger problem of predictability. And not simply just predictability, but I heard an interesting point this week. When you're, like, running a good offense, you know, your plays kind of build off each other. Like, everything become, you know, kind of becomes a flow. You know, one run in football, for example, is not inherently connected to the next pass. But when you're just doing – when you're running a good offense, the plays flow into each other a little bit. And, like, when you watch BC football, it's as if every play stands on its own. Like, a pass 35 yards down the field could work great. And it seems that the next play is probably a run. And it's like, well, did I build off the play I just did in the first place? And it's somewhat of an intangible thing. And if you don't watch the team enough, and if you don't really know football enough, it might be hard to visualize. But the plays just are so isolated from each other. And there's no rhythm to the offense. So I think it speaks, again, to the larger issue of BC having no flow in their offense. And even if one of their runs up the middle gets 15 yards, it's as if the next one doesn't try to build off that. They either do the same thing or do something that doesn't make sense in the context of the game. It's as if, again, there's just no flow. And it's tough to explain, but I do think if you watch it, you would understand that. So I would say when you speak to the larger issue of predictability with the offense and lack of offensive flow on all fronts, the safety, you know, is a great example of that. That's you will have opportunities where it backfires, and that was one of them.
You know, I might disagree with what you said in that BC doesn't have a flow. I think that you can see a little bit of a flow, particularly in the second half when Steve Addazio basically gave up on anything besides just running up the middle. But, I mean, that was successful. Now, will that be successful against stronger ACC opponents? Probably not. Almost certainly not. But I think perhaps you could have... There was a bit of flow. It's just not an optimal strategy that's going to work every time.
Well, I see what you mean. I mean, you're right. They did, when they had the lead and they wanted the milk clock, it was exclusively run, except for, like, you know, four plays. I don't know. At times in the second half. After that, after their,
I feel like there was, like,
four touchdowns.
A weird momentum to it.
Sure.
But, you know, just not when you needed it necessarily.
No, and when you're playing Central Michigan, you probably can run the ball a lot and bully them around and get out of there with the win. Let's keep in mind, if I saw this correctly, that BC did not win the time of possession. No, they had, so Central
no,
Michigan had 31 minutes of time of possession. BC had 28.
That was the biggest thing that surprised me when I got that final stat sheet.
Yeah. So on that end of it, you know, it's not as if, you know, the ground game helped them win there. And that's obviously a part of, I guess, a part of what they want to do if you're going to run the ball that much. And I guess if you're only going to exclusively run it, you can get into a rhythm with that a little bit. And late third quarter, fourth quarter, they were running the ball pretty effectively. But I think Central Michigan was gassed a little bit and their offense was giving them nothing. So, you know, the defense was out there a lot and that kind of stuff. But I guess what I'm trying to say is, you know, let's say Brown finds Jeff Smith on a deep post and, you know, that gets 30 yards. Well, maybe we try something like that again. Or maybe we look for, you know, Michael Walker on the other side of the field when, you know, more of the defense goes to Jeff Smith after a big play. Like, those kind of situations, it seems as if Addazio and Leffler don't build off it. It's like, all right, we got a big play. Now we have the safety and the room to go do what we want to do all day, which is just run the ball up the middle.
It's as if they're one-off random events.
Exactly.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Exactly. That's kind of my point. So that can be frustrating, and I think the offense is, you know, negatively affected by that. But
sure. Now, you know, we were at the press conference after, and Steve Addazio kept talking about Anthony Brown's injury, which I'll admit I did not know about that going into the broadcast. I was not aware he had not practiced the week. But do you think that, and we talked about it a lot over the broadcast, to the extent that the ball should have been in his hand more on passing plays given that injury.
I don't really know what the injury was. I was at the Clemson game. He left that game late, sometime in the fourth quarter, I guess. It was a shoulder injury that I figured out. I don't know if it was soreness or he was sacked hard on it or whatever. Steve Vazio does not – he is very close to the vest with injuries all the time. So it's tough to get any sort of reading on what it was. They clearly went into the game with the plan of we're not going to pass as much as we have. I mean, they had probably 20 less passes against Central Michigan than they've had for the first four games. I mean, that was the fifth game of the year. So they were favoring his injury a little bit. But, I mean, if he's healthy enough to go out there and play, I feel like, you know, you want to try to get some rhythm going with him. And also, as you mentioned during the broadcast, if you have any hope, any chance of winning this week against Virginia Tech, you will need a strong passing game simply because everyone plans for your running game, you know? So I do wish they kind of would have tried to use him in some different ways, but even at that, he didn't look too sharp. So maybe it was just best to avoid possible interceptions. I mean, I think he already has 7 or 8 on the season. So in this game against a team you should win, maybe I can understand their decision there.
No, I agree with you. I think it makes sense to me. You know, obviously went to the running game, which, you know, it's nice that we do have two decent backs with Hilleman and A.J. Smith. You know, I suppose that's the one dimension we have in our offense. You know, who's it going to go to? Any just thoughts on how those two will go into the future? Do you think one is likely to dominate? I think they're pretty close. Dylan had 120 yards on 25 carries. Hilleman had 93 yards on 23. So it was roughly close. Perhaps Dylan just with a bit better on the average yards per carry. Any thoughts on where that goes in the future, particularly when we get into the tougher part of our schedule?
Well, the first thing I will say is I'm glad to see A.J. Dillon getting more carries. In the first game of the year against Northern Illinois, he didn't play too much. Didn't play too much against Wake Forest either. He started to get more carries against Notre Dame and certainly was a big factor in the Clemson game. Scoring his first touchdown in that game, and then he scored another one this past week. So he's a freshman, true freshman. You know, as people know, 4-star recruit, decommitted from Michigan, came here. So I think he's going to be a great part of the rest of this year if the team has success, and certainly in the future. Hillman's a redshirt junior, obviously a great freshman year when you and I were freshmen with a fantastic line. He has not had that kind of line since, and because of that, he has not had the sort of success since. And it's also interesting, I heard this from someone at the school who went to high school with him, that he had never been hurt before. And he broke his ankle, I think, against Florida State when you and I were sophomores, so 2 seasons ago. And he had never been hurt before. That was his first big injury in football. And it sounds like psychologically that injury took a little bit of a toll on him. And he was unable to give it his, you know, full 100% and hit the hole really hard in the way you need to against defenses that are this quick. So I think he's still psychologically recovering from that injury, and maybe I think we're starting to finally see some flashes of that again. But if I were coaching, I would say I would want A.J. Dillon getting the majority of the carries. I think he's a more talented back, and I think at this point, even though it's still, you know, Hillman hasn't been healthy for that long. It's been a year and a half, and I don't think he's matched the production enough yet. Dillon hits the hole harder, and he seems to be a little bit bigger, and he's quicker. So I want to see more of him, and that was what I called for in my game pick for Central Michigan, and luckily we did see some more of him. So he's the, you know, look, they're going to insist on running the ball. I want to see him have the ball.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I think one of the other things with Hilleman that you can't forget is the benefit of having Tyler Murphy as your quarterback.
Oh, yeah.
You know, he was just, maybe not necessarily the best passer. He was the kind of person who would keep defenses on their feet, with the amount that he ran it as well. So Hilleman obviously had a great first season, but, you know, good to see at least we have options. And Dylan will hopefully be around for quite some time.
Mm-hmm.
We've got to talk about Lucas Dennis.
Yeah, he's... he's exciting.
He is.
Yeah, I'm, you know, so impressed by him. I remember hearing about him early last season and wasn't playing too much. Gabe McClary, whose father was in the Commodores. I guess they got kind of a great, like, you know, blues, you know, funk band from, I guess, the 70s. That was an interesting fact I learned, and I think that's very cool. But he was struggling a lot last year, and he was one of the starting corners. And Dennis came in late last season, had the big pick against Wake Forest to secure bowl eligibility, and then he's just played great this year. Really impressed by him. I think he has a great nose for the ball. He is not scared of tackling anyone. I mean, he, you know, he's not a huge guy, but he will go out there. And the BC secondary, I think, plays the run so well. I love Lucas Dennis and Will Harris, who are the safeties. I love the way they play the run. They're willing to make tackles and make big hits. And, you know, also, this shouldn't be understated, and I think this is something, one of the qualities, the great qualities about BC football is that these kids are not only here for football. Lucas Dennis is an impressive young man to off the field as well. And I think he's a great head on his shoulders, and I think that helps tremendously. You and I are both Philadelphia Eagles fans, and when people ask me about Carson Wentz, I say he's physically talented in every way you need a quarterback to be, to then be successful at the NFL level. But I think the head on his shoulders and the mindset that he brings is what's going to put him on a different level. And from what I know about Lucas Dennis, I'd like to say the same thing about him. I think he's exciting to watch. He's not scared of anyone out there. And he has that ferocity that is been inherent in the BC defenses of late. So you got to be excited about him. And he's a guy that I feel like I can always trust out there. And luckily, the corners are good as well, so he's not, you know, having to play as much coverage. But I could not be more impressed with what I've seen from him so far.
Yeah, and I think particularly the headline for BC defenses of past years is a weak secondary. And
yeah, particularly last year.
Yeah, yeah, and you know, it's nice to see a change around it.
Yeah,
you know, we still have you know, our strong line. You know, Landry and. Zach Allen is obviously also a very great addition, but you know, it's just good to see that we can stop a team's passing game.
Yeah, I mean, I think the linebackers are with the injuries are the real hole in the defense.
Yeah.
So,
but look, it's you know, our defense still looks good. You know, I think there's a lot of fear that our defense could be falling off, particularly losing our coordinator. Was that 2 years back?
Don Brown, it was 2 years ago. Yeah.
It's good to see that our defense still looks strong. You know, mm-hmm. Get those linebackers back.
Yeah, I mean, after the Notre Dame game, I think BC's defense was like literally in the 90s or you know, 100s in total defense, in the NCAA ranking of total defense. And after that game, I'm like, man, you can't be that low and still be good. I mean, people, I think, want to say that the BC defense has always been good because they've been good for the last couple of years. But I looked at those stats after the Notre Dame game, and I'm thinking, like, no, they're not. They're not that good. And I've come back on that. Like, they missed a lot of gaps. The linebackers were not ready to play against that kind of team at the time. And because of that, I will side with Adazio on this one, that the stats are skewed off of that game, but as I've watched them more, I think this defense actually is still pretty good.
Yeah. Moving to the other side of the ball, special teams.
Yes, yeah. That's been, I mean, special teams has been as exciting as special teams can be.
Really?
I guess. I mean, Michael Walker's just done such a great job with punt returns, and I was nervous because after last year, BC had Tyler Rouse returning punts, and although he was not an explosive player by any means, I just thought that he was so consistent with catching punts. And catching a punt, Matt, I put this up there with a lot of different things, like, you know, hitting a major league fastball or that different stuff. I think catching a punt at high-level football is one of the hardest things to do in sports. It requires a balance between field vision and simply just looking the ball in and knowing where you want to go or if you want a fair catch. There's so much you have to process in that moment. And sometimes what comes by the wayside in that moment is literally focusing on catching the ball, which is the most important thing. So Michael Walker's done a good job with that so far. So I'm impressed by that. Colton Lichtenberg missed two kicks, as we can talk about that. But overall, he's looked... Look, it's not been a low point for BC kicking, as we've seen in years past. Mike Knoll has done a solid job on punting. Nothing insane, but solid. Max, I'm not even sure how you pronounce his name, the soccer player who's doing kickoffs, is just been so impressive. He's, I mean,
they go far.
Yeah,
they,
he's got a cannon of a leg.
He absolutely does.
That's like kind of fun to watch too. So I've certainly enjoyed Schultz-Gleisteifel. Sorry, I should know this, but I'm always scared of how to pronounce it. So I think special teams has been a lot of fun, and you know, if you put together some better play on the offense, I think the team has the ability to win some games. But it's got to happen on the offense before I can say they will.
Well, you want to talk about that? You want to say what does the offense have to do to beat Virginia Tech? I think we've already hinted that there needs to be a passing game of some sort. You're not going to beat them with the same kind of offense we played against Central Michigan.
No, Virginia Tech has a very good defense. They run a 4-2-5, so they're running. Five defensive backs with like a rover position as a, I guess it's like a linebacker hybrid. I know it's very confusing what they run, but Bud Foster is a defensive coordinator, and he's definitively one of the best coordinators in college football. And they have a lot of returning stars from last year, so they're good, and they will be all over the run. They're going to need, I mean, again, it's a running joke a little bit that I think, like, it's so easy to predict BC plays. But, like, let's talk about how easy it really is to predict those plays. So this is my favorite one to talk about is when Thad Smith is in the game, they've been using him a lot on end-arounds. So he'll come around from the outside, and they'll hand the ball off to him, and he'll try to get it to the edge and make a run out of it. He's had some good runs early in the season. Of late, it has not been as effective. But when Thad Smith is on the field, they don't pass the ball to him. Like, he hardly gets the ball. He might have one target all year. Did not have many last year. He was one of the leading receivers when we were sophomores. They were decimated with injuries. But this year, they don't pass him the ball. Like, he is not a pass-catching receiver. I think he has the ability to be, but that's not what they do with him in the offense. So when he's on the field and he does not come in motion, you know they're running the ball. Like, that simple thing. I mean, this is a somewhat of a dumb idea, but to be sarcastically extreme, I would blitz everyone. Like, when Thad Smith is on the field and he is not coming in motion, I would go an 11-man blitz on that because you know where the ball's going. Like, I would run the corners in. They will not pass him the ball, even if he is wide open without anyone near him. So, like, things like that, you need to at least just disguise your setup even, or for once go 4 or 5 wide in a spread instead of having like a double tight end set or something like that. The play calling itself is one thing, but the way you set up the plays is that's part of the offense. I'm not going to make them, you know, change the way they, but it's,
if we notice it, Virginia Tech's notice.
Yeah. It's these little things that seem, I mean, this is a complicated sport, and it seems, I just don't understand how they can do, like, how it can be so predictable. I am yet to see a play this year where Thad Smith is on the field, does not come in motion, and they target him or in some fashion. You know, sometimes he's out there with Jeff Smith, so maybe Jeff Smith will get a target off those plays. But that's kind of my extreme example. They need to find a way to fool some people. And I think their offense has been so one-dimensional that if they really came at, I mean, if they did what they did, and this is an overused example, but it's true for those that watch the game, if they did this week what they did in Maryland in the first half of the Quick Lane Bowl, I think BC could win. I think BC has enough talent on this team to beat Virginia Tech.
Yeah, I agree with you on the talent end. But
I don't think they will use it. And it goes back to the kind of a play-not-to-lose mentality. So
yeah. To look beyond that, just to pick a raw number out of the thin air, what do you think our odds are of going 6-6, getting a bowl? Just to pick a number, Steve.
Yeah.
Your thoughts.
Okay, so if I give a percentage chance, I'm going to say, I'm going to say 35%.
35?
Yeah. As we look...
I'm a bit lower. I'm thought about this before. 20%, I think.
Yeah, so
I'd give.
I'm not ready to hop on the Virginia bandwagon yet. Although at this moment, I'm thinking that Virginia's going to win that game, but I'm not ready to hop on them yet. If they beat them, that gives them 3 wins. And then I think you have potential, I think, in those last three games if they can straighten up, if they can finally learn how to kind of, you know, go correctly with the offense. But, I mean, I can't go any more than beyond that because I really – if I had to call every game for the rest of the season, I mean, I'm thinking three wins. I mean, that's the way it looks right now. Based on what I've seen, I think they beat UConn, and I think everyone else they lose to. I think that last game at Syracuse, Syracuse is a better team than I think people give them credit for a little bit because they've had some weird games this year. But their quarterback, Eric Dungy, is very dynamic, and I think he can find ways to win. He's a real gamer out there. So, yeah, maybe I'll go 30%. Maybe I'll – because this team did find a way to you know, beat – a decent NC State and Wake Forest team last year, despite it being very ugly. So I will not take that away from them. I'll maybe say 30, but if I had to give you a, you know, what I think they'll do for the rest of the year, I think it's not much more than three or four wins.
NC State is ranked now.
They are ranked.
They are 24. That's
and that's kind of going off of what people saw in the preseason. Some people thought that they were a real pick. We'll see. I'm not, again, also ready to say that they're, you know, a real true top 20 team, but right now they are ranked, and we'll see where that goes from there. But yeah, I will give this team the benefit of the doubt based on what I've seen from the defense and say 30% chance that they can find a way to pull off maybe at least five games, because as we remember last year, that academic progress index kind of thing.
I thought we had six wins. We only had five.
No, we had six last year, but going into the Wake Forest game, people thought
that's right.
The bowl game was still a possibility. So to I guess, again, pull back further, I'll say 30% chance they get the five wins and at least open up the possibility of a bowl game.
Okay, I could raise my percentage if, we're going off that. And that is, of course, you know, I think we got a decent shot of, you know, doing something on the academic progress.
Sure, which I'm not sure if I'm a fan of that. I think, like, I want teams to win six games. You know, and there's too many bowl games to begin with, but
that's for sure.
That's a podcast for another time.
That it certainly is.
So, you know, we'll see. But the positives, you know, another good game from A.J. Dillon. Lucas Dennis continues to cement himself as I think one of the premier playmakers in the ACC in the secondary. Maybe even on the whole defense. So exciting stuff there. The game this week, 7:15, Saturday primetime game, which is an interesting choice, I think, for the Saturday primetime game, but should be fun. So, yeah, that's about going to do it for episode 4 of season 2, WCBC Sports Podcast. Matt, thank you for bringing some good insights and some good questions into this one. We had a good time.
Thanks a lot, Steve.
Yeah, so we will see you next time on WZBC Sports Podcast. Check out all of our content, as always, at WZBCSports.com. Have a good one, and go Eagles.
Santini, make a nice little pass over to Sanford. Sanford gives it to Tuck. Tuck with a shot. Oh! Tuck scores. Eagles win. The Eagles have won the 2016 Steve Hunt Championship.
Catch all the excitement of Boston College Athletics right here on WZBC Newton 90.3 FM. As BC's only student radio broadcasting organization, WZBC Sports brings a different viewpoint of college athletics to the table. Our student commentators know the campus, student-athlete culture, and latest beat on the teams like no other media outlet, thanks to our dedicated coverage of Boston College sports. Check out our broadcast or weekly talk show schedules at www.wzbcsports.com and get a refreshing take on sporting events at the Heights and beyond.